From the Carnegie Tsinghua Center in Beijing, China, this is the China in the World podcast hosted by Paul Hanley.
Listening to the Carnegie Tsinghua China in the World podcast, a series of conversations with Chinese and international experts on China's foreign policy, international role, and China's relations with the world, brought to you from the Carnegie Tsinghua Center, located here in Beijing, China. Today, we're delighted to welcome Dr. Chen Dingding, Professor of International Relations at Jinan University and a non-resident fellow at the Global Public Policy Institute in Berlin. I had the opportunity to meet Dr. Chen Dingding in January 2011 at a conference in Shanghai. At that time, he was teaching at the University of Macau. He has also recently founded a new independent think tank called the Intellisia Institute, which is dedicated to international affairs in China. Previously, Dr. Chen Dingding served as a visiting instructor in the government department at Dartmouth College in the United States, and a China and the World Fellow Program Fellow at Princeton University. He earned his master's in the United States and his PhD, both from the University of Chicago. Today, I'll be speaking to Dr. Chen Dingding about Trump's election and the impact of his election on U.S.-China relations and broader regional stability in the Asia-Pacific. Dr. Chen Dingding, it's great to see you again, and thank you for taking time to join us today. Let me just start, if I could. To the pressing issues, one, of course, of which is, we all know, North Korea. This situation has become increasingly worse over the Obama administration. I think it is clearly in a worse place than it was when President Obama came into office. North Korea has a new leader, Kim Jong-un. New leader, I say. He's been in office, I guess, almost 5 years now. But nevertheless, he's carried out a very aggressive and fast-paced approach to improving their missile technology and their nuclear capabilities. And I think this is clearly becoming one of the highest priority national security issues in the Asia-Pacific. Donald Trump has said a couple things. One, that China is not doing enough, that China needs to do more. And he said also that he would be willing to meet with Kim Jong-un and eat a hamburger with him or something to that effect. What about this notion that China hasn't done enough? Is this, you know, if Donald Trump continues with this rhetoric, getting China to do more, where might this take the United States and China with regard to the North Korea problem?
I think China has agreed to the latest round of sanctions on North Korea, right? And which is a positive step, I think, toward resolving the issue. I think China, the notion that China has not done enough could be half true, half wrong. Half true in the sense that, yes, China could do more, right, to sanction North Korea and all that. But the problem is, if you put too much sanctions on North Korea, that could potentially lead to the collapse of North Korea, which is bad for everybody, including the U.S. So in that sense, yeah, everybody could do more. But do you really want to push to the limits and make it collapse? I think that's not a good option. It's wrong in the sense that maybe it's a misperception on Trump's side that China could easily persuade North Korea to give up its nuclear ambitions. I don't think any country has that kind of a capability. North Korea is determined to do that at whatever cost, unless its internal explosion exploded, right? I think they are determined. They have tried the tactics in the 1990s by agreeing to the framework, then somehow, you know, continued their projects without, you know, being punished accordingly. I think they have seen the fate of Saddam Hussein. They have seen the fate of Gaddafi. They have seen the fate of Iran. So I think in their minds, I think, you know, nuclear weapons, of course, in my view, wrong view, is the only way they can, you know, protect their regime in the country, which is wrong in my view, because that would only increase the threat in the eyes of the U.S. Mm-hmm. and other allies. Because a non-nuclear North Korea, to be honest, is not a threat to U.S.
Mm-hmm.
It's far, far away from the U.S.
You mentioned these latest sanctions. I think it's roughly 60% of North Korean coal exports mm-hmm. will be denied by China. How serious is that? And should we, you know, I mean, should we, is it important to let these play out to see how they affect the equation?
I think the question is whether North Korea can survive without these, you know, coal exports or imports. And my own hunch is they can.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't mean that they will not suffer from these sanctions. They will. But still, the question is they can survive maybe at a minimum, right, for many, many more years. So it's not really, again, I don't think all these sanctions can really work in the sense make them understand, okay, it's time to give up nuclear weapons.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be some sort of coordination. Maybe six-party talks, maybe, you know, three-party talks, maybe some other form of, you know, dialogue. It has to be multilateral.
Mm-hmm.
And it has to, I mean, North Korea has to be confident about its safety. It has to be confident about its relations with first U.S. and then South Korea and then Japan.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, again, is a multilateral effort. Neither U.S. nor China or any other country has the capability to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something, one area I hope in the future, and I'm, you know, hoping that both U.S. and China can work on.
Let me, in closing here, let's talk about South China Sea, because this has been a major issue of contention between the U.S. and China over the course of the Obama administration. Since the tribunal ruling, which was announced mm-hmm. this past summer, and the Philippine president, the new President Duterte, being elected, we've seen things cool down in mm-hmm. the South China Sea. Many say that was because the G20 was held here in China, and mm-hmm. Chinese leaders wanted to make sure that that went off without a lot of friction and wanted mm-hmm. to make sure that the U.S. president and other heads of state came. And now things remain cool because China's seeing how this new relationship with the Philippine president will affect things going forward. But just recently we saw news that China had conducted building military facilities on 7 of these reclaimed islands. And also the Chinese Navy picked up a U.S. unmanned underwater vehicle, which the Chinese government says they'll give back to the United States. Are we beginning to see now more tension going, you know, going forward in the South China Sea? And is this, was there some signaling being done on China? Is this a response to Donald Trump's tweets and comments on the One China policy and injecting some turbulence into the U.S.-China relationship?
Well, I cannot be 100% confident, but I do not see that as a message targeting Donald Trump's previous comments on Taiwan. I think it could be a random event, you know, decision made by the, you know, people around there based on whatever information they had.
Mm-hmm. Okay. PLA Navy, basically, right?
Right.
They picked it up.
Right. And so in that sense, we should not look too much into that mm-hmm. because, you know, it's random, right? It's not a pattern. And but regarding South China Sea, I don't think the tensions would either go up too much or come down too much. Because first of all, the Trump administration is going to demonstrate strength, because that's one of their slogans, to make America great again. In what sense? You have to have strength to be great. So you're going to demonstrate strength. That means you're going to demonstrate your strength in South China Sea. But then again, South China Sea is not one of the top priorities for the new administration. So the tensions will more or less stay the same, not, you know, going either direction too much, I mean, dramatically. And I could foresee some kind of tensions, you know, random events like this one in the next year or so. But I don't think that would push two countries into to the brink of you know, major confrontation.
Do you expect to see more reclamation activities by China going forward?
And I don't think so, because they have already done a lot, and they're going to just consolidate. They don't want to make unnecessary provocations to the U.S., because that would give the U.S. more reasons to come back and make things more
How
unstable.
About the announcement of an air defense identification zone in the South China Sea?
I don't think that would happen. It's unnecessary. What's the benefit? I think we have to think about the benefit and the costs, unless something major happens.
Sure. The other big issue in 2017, in addition to Donald Trump becoming president of the United States in January, of course, is the 19th Party Congress in China in the fall of 2017. Can you talk a little bit about how you think the political transition that will take place throughout the year of 2017 will impact U.S.-China relations and the issue of Donald Trump becoming president of the United States? How does that play into all that?
I think that's probably the most important event this year for China. And in that sense, it's good news, because from China's side, we don't want any instability or even chaos for this year. So that would make U.S.-China relations, I guess, more stable, because in China, from China's perspective, we don't want to fight, because we have more urgent.
China's not looking to pick a fight. The question is, Donald Trump looking to pick a fight?
Right.
And what happens in that particular scenario?
That would give China a headache, how to respond to that. I think China would respond in a very firm way, basically telling the other side, if you do try to make some trouble, we do have ways to counter, counterattack, so to speak, right? And if you don't make such provocations and the troubles, we will stay. We'll stay our way. Okay, we don't want to make troubles first.
What do China experts see as sort of the top three things that the Chinese side has with respect to leverage on the United States? Over the United States. I mean, a lot of people talk about the economic relationship. Of course, Boeing aircraft, one of six Boeing aircrafts are sold to the Chinese.
Yes. I guess that depends on what the U.S. wants the most, right? Then something you want the most, that's your vulnerable point. So then the other side can press, push that, buttons. I think trade, of course, is one issue that China has some cards to play, I guess. You mentioned Boeing. Yes, Boeing employs, I don't know how many, less than 180,000 employees based on China's orders. So if China moves those orders to Europe, I can imagine there will be some major job losses in that area. So examples like that, I think we can see more and more. And agricultural products from the Midwest, particularly important for Donald Trump, to maintain his stability and then maybe even aim for the next second term. So if China can punish those states, particularly in terms of agricultural exports, then that's a weak point for Donald Trump. And what else? China can refuse to cooperate on North Korea, on the Iran issue, and even on the Middle East issue. Fighting ISIS, for example. So those areas, I think China can either cooperate or not cooperate. And that would depend on how important those issues are to Donald Trump. If he thinks those are important, I think we can come to some sort of cooperation. If he thinks, not important, then China wouldn't have much leverage.
Well, there's a lot in store for 2017 for the U.S.-China relationship, and I want to thank you for coming today to the Carnegie Tsinghua Center to an event that we held on this issue, and also for joining the podcast. And given we have so much in store for 2017, Professor Chen Dingding, we hope you'll come back.
Thank you, Paul. Thank you very much for this wonderful discussion, and I do hope to come back for another discussion after January.
Great. Thank you very much. That's it for this edition of Carnegie Tsinghua China and the World podcast. I encourage you to explore our site and see the work of all our scholars at the Carnegie Tsinghua Center. Thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in next time.